Welcome, everybody, to a new episode of the Calling It Podcast, recording Tuesday, February 11th, just past the top of the 4 o'clock hour. I am Alex Barth, joined, as always, by Alex Lebowitz. We are powered by CLNS Media. Lebowitz, what's up?
Not much. How you doing?
I'm all right. It's a cold, dreary February day. We're about that time of the year where everything just sort of sucks for 2 months.
It really does stink outside. We've been really lucky. I hate to start off with weather talk, but here we are.
Oh, no, don't do this again. 2 years ago, you talked about how we didn't get any snow on a show. And then, like, the next 4 weeks, we got a foot of snow once a week. Do this to us again.
I'm going to say the opposite, though. We are kind of due. But it is brutal.
Tomorrow, it's going to be a foot now.
I know. It is brutal, though. Like, today, it's just completely dark and depressing outside. It's, like, misty and foggy and... there's no leaves on the trees. It looks like the beginning of an apocalyptic film.
It does.
Outside. And I really hate it. I hate it. This is the most depressing time of the year. And it's my birthday month. And I'm still depressed. So
no, I mean, mine's in March. Like, I feel that. But at least March
is like on the downturn. And you're like, oh, we got April coming up.
Late,
that's great.
Later March. Like when March Madness starts. Between the Super Bowl and March Madness, it's just, ugh. This is the worst.
I say typically after New Year's to March Madness, but really it's after the Super Bowl to March Madness.
You have the NFL playoffs.
Yeah, exactly. That takes you through it. But it was Truck Day last week. We got pitchers and catchers.
It was Truck Day.
And a manager for the Red Sox.
There is a manager. There is pitchers and catchers. There is no superstar. We got to get into all that. We'll start with that one. The Red Sox trading Mookie Betts twice in the last week, because you know why go through that all once? No, you knew it was coming, so it's hard to say why did they trade Mookie Betts. I don't want to have that conversation because it's been had to death. The reality is, they had a chance to pull out of the deal, they didn't. They took two, it's still good, but lesser prospects instead of Gratterall. And this is what it's going to come down to me. I think what's even more interesting than the Betts trade itself at this point, because that was happening. One way or another, Mookie Betts was getting traded. I have moved past that. What the Red Sox essentially did is there's a trade within the trade. They gave up Brusdar Gratterall, who did end up going to the Dodgers. They gave up Brusdar Gratterall to get Jeter Downs and Connor Wong. And that, to me, is what's going to be fascinating to follow. Mookie Betts is going to be a great player in L.A. That's what's going to happen. Alex Verdugo is going to be better Andrew Benintendi in Boston. That's the reality of it. Okay? The question is, can Jeter Downs and Connor Wong outperform for the Red Sox whatever Brusdar Gratterall does for the Dodgers? And the other interesting thing that ties into that is you look at the Red Sox organizational depth. They have almost no starting pitching. They have Tanner Houck. They have Brian Mata. They got two names who are set to come up really within the next 3 or 4 years, unless somebody comes out of nowhere and surprises us as a top-end starter. The Red Sox passed on getting a starting pitcher who they desperately needed, just any starting pitcher. They passed on getting a starting pitcher in this trade in order to get two position players. Now, Jeter Downs, a second baseman, where they could also use some help. And Connor Wong is a catcher, but he got to play anywhere on the diamond. He actually is sort of a Brock Holt type. So it's not like they got players at positions that are loaded at, but they desperately need starting pitching and they passed on it. So that is Lebowitz, and I'll let you weigh in here in a second. But the two questions I'm posing are, it's not about Mookie Betts anymore to me. It's moved past that. Are Jeter Downs and Connor Wong worth giving up on Brusdar Gratterall? Because Gratterall's a better player. The issue there is purely health-wise, and he's had a shoulder issue and elbow issue. Is it worth not risking those injuries to take these two lesser prospects? And just as a whole, are the Red Sox going to regret not picking up a starting pitcher in this deal?
So I think when you look at a guy who throws 101 miles per hour, he's 21, 22? 21 years old.
6'1", 265.
It's inevitable. He's going to have to get surgery at some point. We've seen it with pretty much every pitcher who throws that hard. It's going to happen. And, you know, when you have guys who are power pitchers like that, or, you know, throw 101 miles per hour, I do think they're, you know, more well suited in the bullpen. I just do. If you want to get the most out of them, you want them to last. You want them to be valuable all year and not just through June. They're better in the bullpen. So was it worth still getting that guy if he was going to be a reliever? Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. I think that is definitely something to look out for. I think the bigger question is, you know, when are they going to start building up the pitching within their farm system? We've seen it the past five, six, 7 years. You've had Xander Bogaerts. You've grown Andrew Benintendi, Mookie Betts, Rafael Devers. Where are the pitchers? Where are the pitchers in this Red Sox farm system? Where's the homegrown talent within the Red Sox farm system, on the mound? We had John Lester. We had Clay Buchholz. We had some guys in the 2000s. But it's been a while. And maybe Erod. Maybe that's the only guy I can think of right now. But besides that, there really hasn't been any success in that realm. And so what do? They go out and they get more bats when you don't really need that in the future. You're kind of loaded with young guys who can hit well, who you're probably going to end up securing, hopefully, unless, you know, their names end up being Mookie Betts. So my whole question is, when are they going to start building up their pitching in their farm system? You mentioned a couple names. Will that be enough? And should they have targeted another pitcher instead of going after Connor Wong and Jeter Downs, and, you know, over Gratterall? So what's going to be the move there? And I think that's something that they need to start working on specifically moving forward.
Well, the thing is, and there are still moves to be made. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. There are still moves to be made. And the next domino to fall to me is Jackie Bradley Jr. Because Alex Verdugo can play right field. And he actually is pretty well suited to play right field at Fenway, but he's a center fielder by trade. It's where he has the most experience. It's where he's played the most. It's where he's going to be the best fit. They need to figure out a way long term, until they decide not to pay him and trade him in 5 years. They need to figure out a way long term to get him in center field. That involves moving on from Jackie Bradley Jr. He's on the last year of his contract. Look, you're not going to get a haul for Jackie Bradley Jr., certainly not, but you can get something for him. He is not worth letting walk for nothing. If I'm the Red Sox, I am looking to trade Jackie Bradley Jr. for a Bruce Dar Gratterall type of pitcher, maybe not quite at that level, but a guy who is in his early to mid-20s and is MLB ready and has pitched in the big leagues, and a guy you can throw in the middle or at the back end of that starting rotation. That has to be the next move for the Red Sox, whether it comes during spring training, whether it comes at the deadline, whether it comes next winter. That move has to happen in the next 365 days, I think. That is key. Because if you look at the Red Sox rotation right now, and I keep going back to it, and we'll do more general Red Sox previews as we go on here through spring training. But the number one question I have about this team, the number one question, is the starting rotation. The Red Sox have four pitchers on their 40-man roster, four pitchers with two or more years of MLB service time. And that's if you still include Hector Velasquez as a starting pitcher, which he's more of an opener now than a starter. Two of those, so you take out Hector Velasquez, that gives you three. And then you have Eduardo Rodriguez and Chris Sale, who are both ticking time bombs when it comes to injury. So the Red Sox starting rotation could get really messy really quickly. That's something they need to address now. I know that this year might be a throwaway, but you need to be able to get through this year, whether it's signing Andrew Cashner in free agency or another arm in free agency. And frankly, they probably do need to sign at least one. Expediting the process for Denyi Reyes from the minor leagues, a guy who projects to be nothing more than a fifth starter, but a guy who might be ready to be a fifth starter right now at 23 years old. They have to do something. They have to figure out some way to bring in starting pitching, because right now it's just clearly not enough. And it's that, to me, more than anything else, is a story to follow here in the next month and a half.
What about their bullpen, though? I feel like they, you know, Craig
Kimbrel, doesn't matter if you don't have starting pitching.
It doesn't, but they have a base with that starting rotation, and you can
do
get
they,
a.
But do they though?
I mean, you have Erod, who you mentioned it. He's coming off of a year in which he received Cy Young votes. Chris Sale, if he can stay healthy. Nathan Eovaldi, if he can stay healthy. I think health is the biggest issue with that starting rotation. And, you know, you look at guys they've gotten in the past, whether it be Eovaldi or, you know, Rick Porcello. They have had success trading for starting pitching in the past.
But they need to do it.
Yeah, they should. But I also think that they need to bring in some relievers who are elite, reliable, a closer, maybe, dare I say, because it seems like, with the exception of, you know, three or four guys over the past three or four years, they haven't brought in a bunch of great talent. And obviously they were carried by a great offense and a starting rotation. But I'd like to see them bulk up that bullpen a little bit and not run into a problem in the future like they did this past year.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think so. the other thing about this year being a punt, and you're not going to pay a closer big money if you're going to punt on this season because closers can be so year to year.
Yeah.
Ron Renicki on Tuesday, the day we're recording this, reverse call Nick Kearse. This happened just before we started recording. Ron Renicki has been named the interim manager of the Boston Red Sox and Lebowitz. You know what that tells me? Probably tells it to you too. Everybody. It's a pretty transparent move. Alex Cora is going to be suspended for a year. Ron Renicki will manage the Red Sox. They will punt because they have a gross love obsession with Alex Cora and couldn't bear win without him, right? And then he'll be back next year and they'll really load up and go for it. So I don't think they're too worried about the bullpen in a year they don't care about. This is like, you know, when couples in high school, they would, you know, not go out in college, like freshman year of college, like they wouldn't go to events. They wouldn't go to like place where you could meet people because, oh, you know, my boyfriend, my girlfriend's in another school, so I'm not going to go. We're just going to stay in. We're going to FaceTime. The Red Sox are basically staying in this year and FaceTiming Alex Cora. That's what the interim tag tells me.
Yes, potentially. But why not fire him and just let the punishment play out?
Because I think the MLB made them for optics. Remember, they didn't fire him. They were very insistent about the fact, and you put two and two together here. They were very insistent about the fact it was a mutual parting of ways. And you remember back to that press conference, outside of Chaim Bloom, who, by the way, has been a superstar this whole offseason. I loved his comments about the Mookie Betts trade yesterday. I have a piece up on that right now on 98.5thesportshub.com if you want to read it. You remember that press conference, though, where they insisted they did not fire Alex Cora, and they just bowed down and kissed his ring. They could not say a bad word about a guy who at the time it looked like torpedoed the franchise. They were I'm trying to figure out a way to say this without being too vulgar, but they were on hands and knees for the guy. They really were.
They probably knew more about the situation than the public did. And at this point, I think the public's opinion has changed. And it seems like this was. I think so. I think the more information that's come out, it's become more apparent that Cora, although he definitely deserves some blame, that he was a scapegoat in some ways for Lou Now and Hinch, since he wasn't a part of that Astros club anymore. And it was, you know, something that really started at the top as opposed to something that went through Alex Cora and Carlos Beltran. I think they both kind of got the raw end of this deal with how this transpired. So maybe they knew that and they didn't want to blame him. And hey, I don't blame an organization.
Look, the players were wearing buzzers. You can't.
No, it was a bad thing. It wasn't good, but I think that Cora had a disproportionate amount of the blame, and it went beyond him. Did he play into it? Sure. Is he to blame partially? Absolutely. But I think that this whole ordeal came down to a systematic problem within that clubhouse that started at the top. And to blame the bench coach for it and try to pin it all on him, which is something that, in my opinion, Lou Now and Hinch kind of attempted to do when dealing with the MLB during their investigation. I think for them to do that was kind of cowardly. They should have taken more blame than they did. And now I think that Cora's implicated to a degree that's not entirely appropriate. I'm not saying I think Carlos Beltran got a way worse deal than Cora did. I understand why the Red Sox did what they did. And I also think that Manfred has not been completely transparent in his findings. But I do think that Cora, there is a path for redemption for a guy like that. And to act like what he did was the worst thing to ever happen in baseball, I think that's also over the top. So, yeah, he could come back. I said it as soon as it happened. Alex Cora will be a manager, not just a coach, will be a manager in the MLB again. I don't know if it's going to be next season. I don't know if it's going to be with the Red Sox, but you know, I think it's clear that this move of hiring Ron Renicki is a move to buy time, not a move for the next 5-10 years.
Not to cut you off, and I'm just seeing this here as I'm looking on Twitter. We're recording. Evan Drellick and Ken Rosenthal just dropped another article, and they've been spot on with all of this.
Yes.
Calling Eric, quote, in that context, I don't know what context. Let me pull up the full thing here. But, I mean, this kind of derails what you were just saying. Here we go. Few players – this is from Drellick and from Rosenthal, The Athletic. Few players voiced any objection at the time to Beltran or anyone else in authority, and the Astros continued with a different form of illicit sign stealing that following season, is referring to the buzzers, after Beltran had retired. Major League Baseball had failed to take enough action to prevent such activity in the seasons leading up to 2017. In that context, Beltran, along with former bench coach Alex Cora, became a driving force behind the trash can banging system that marked a culmination of the Astros' use of electronics to steal signs illegally. And some Astros players, even manager A.J. Hinch, felt powerless to stop Cora. So
That's weak.
No, but here's the thing. Lunho and Hinch started it, right? They started it with that intern in the spreadsheet and the director of advanced statistics, which is, by the way, a bananas title to give somebody if you're blatantly cheating. To have somebody in your that's something people would make up the Patriots doing. But that was the thing. Remember, and then it shifted, and then the MLB kind of came in and it shifted, and then they moved all the equipment down to behind the dugout the next year, and they started banging on the trash cans. There were two phases of this. Lunho and Hinch started it. Phase two, which was just a blatant in-your-face cheating, the banging on trash cans. Evan Drellick has it right here, okay? Ken Rosenthal has it right here. Alex Cora became a driving force behind the trash can banging system. Driving force, Lebowitz. The Red Sox are hiring an interim manager so that next year they can bring back the driving force behind the trash can banging system just because they like the man's politics. How is it going to look next year for a team that is so PR conscious? Now, I'm not talking about in the fan base. I'm talking nationally. How is it going to look next year when the Red Sox bring back Alex Cora? Will they be able to go through with it? Are we going to get another week like we just had of will they, won't they reports when Ken Rosenthal tweets in the middle of the night that management is shitting their pants because the mean men on the radio said something bad about him? This is unbelievable that they are going to this step.
Well, I also think that this is all the more reason Rob Manfred should have been more transparent from the start and did a thorough investigation.
And you're right, but we're here. I'm not here to talk. We're going to trash Manfred in a second. Trust me.
Yes,
we're going to get into plenty of that. But where we are right now with the sign stealing thing, you cannot name this guy an interim manager if Alex Cora is reportedly the, again, I'll use the direct quote, driving force behind the trash can banging system.
Well, a couple notes. One, Ron Renneke is an experienced manager. He had 4 years under his belt in Milwaukee. He's had decades of experience as a player and
it's
a coach.
Against Renneke, but name him the manager and let sleeping dogs lie.
I guess. I just don't think that it's that bad of a choice for Red Sox ownership to make. I think it makes sense. It's someone in-house for a team that's only, you know, a year removed from World Series.
What do you think is a bad choice, to hire Renneke or to make him interim?
I think to make him an interim based off the fact that, you know, Cora was terminated, 3 weeks ago? So it's just to have that happen is such an inopportune time, and you can't really do your due diligence to look for a manager that's going to be a fit for your ball club. So why not go in?
But you're not going to be able to do that till next season anyway. So why not just name him the manager and then just get rid of him next year?
Because I think you name a manager, you it gives them an out. I agree. It makes sense. It gives them an out. And obviously if they're going to do this, it's either a job interview type of thing or maybe Cora's waiting in the wing. I don't know though. You mentioned PR consciousness among this Red Sox front office, their ownership, particularly. I don't know if they'd go through with that. I think that there's other people out there. Maybe Jason Veritek was the guy they had in mind. And since he didn't want this job this year, they went elsewhere.
Renneke the manager. The interim tag implies that he's not the manager. He's not. He's the interim manager. There's a difference there. There's a distinct difference in a team that has been unraveling at the seams for the last 3 months. The last thing they need is a lack of clarity about who's in charge.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I get that. So we're sure he was named the interim. He's not named the full-time manager. He's named the interim manager. I don't know. It's an odd move.
The Red Sox themselves, Lebowitz, have tweeted out a graphic that says the Boston Red Sox announced Ron Renneke interim manager. They put it on the freaking graphic. They want everybody to know. They want the entire world to know that this is not really their guy.
Then I guess it isn't. But I don't think that necessarily means that Cora's back. I just think it means they didn't have enough time to look for the guy.
But they're not going to get the guy this year.
No, I get that. But I don't think they want to commit to him for more than 1 year. And when you hire him on as the manager, the insinuation is, you know, if they do as well as they're capable of doing, which for this team is 80 to 85 wins, then he's going to stick around. And I think they're capable of doing that with Ron Reinicke, but that's not an indication that he is the right guy for the job.
His contract's up at the end of the year.
Yeah, I know.
Done with him at the end of the year, whatever his title is.
But again, you're talking about optics, I guess. So they want that out. They want that out, and they're not committed to it. They're not committed to him. And
right,
so
I don't. That's concerning to me.
I guess. But it's not like the Bobby Valentine debacle. He was signed as the manager, then he was fired. And that created a whole new circus around the Red Sox. Maybe they don't want to bring more undue press than they've already had. I don't know. It's a bizarre move. It's a bizarre franchise. They've won four World Series since the turn of the century, and they're still hated. They've fallen into a number of those World Series, and they've made horrible decisions. And every time that they step in and overreach, you end up getting horrible things. Horrible things tend to happen to them, like this Mookie Betts trade. And this isn't any of their own doing, the Alex Cora debacle. But obviously the handling is not going to be, it's not going to be well handled by Red Sox ownership. They've never been able to do that. So I don't know. This whole situation is frustrating. I don't know what to make of it. All I'm saying is Ron Reinicke makes sense given the circumstances that the Red Sox are in. Will they keep him? Will they keep him? I don't care. I just think that they needed to make a decision right now, and going in-house was the way to go. I'm not going to read too deep into the interim title.
I totally am.
I would be upset if they were hiring him and they tried to lie to us and they were like, so are you going to keep this? Is this guy the man for the future? Do you see him staying here for the next 5 years? Because you know those questions are coming if he's hired as the manager. I think with the interim, it removes a lot of that speculation.
Does an interim means more questions? Why is he the interim manager?
Well,
Isn't that kind of easy to answer?
We lost our manager 3 weeks before pitchers and catchers reported to spring training. We don't want to commit to a guy.
No. Okay, the first question, it's going to be some grab-ass question. Obviously. Yeah, but the first question better be, why is he the interim manager? Whatever the answer is, because it's going to be some talk around, well, does this mean that you're not committed to him being the manager for the entire season? Does this mean you're not committed to him being the manager throughout spring training? Does this mean you're still interviewing candidates? That's a very valid question. Are they still interviewing candidates?
And maybe they are.
Stopgap.
Maybe they are. I don't know. It's odd. It's odd. You'd think that they would have just given him the title and then moved forward. But this is going to bring more questions. I don't know. I think that question mark, whether or not he's the interim, the fact that he's the interim and his future in general, that's the least of their concerns right now. And again, I wouldn't want them to stick with Ron Reinicke for the long term and not naming him the manager. Yeah, it's not great. It's going to bring a lot more stress to them, but we'll see. It's a mess. I think the main story here is that the Red Sox right now are a mess. And will Chaim Bloom be able to, you know, revamp this roster, be able to get rid of, to cut the fat, for lack of a better term, back from a Mookie Betts trading, you know, the best player the Red Sox have ever developed, at least in decades since, you know, Nomar, you could argue. So I don't know. It's a mess. They have a list of problems. I wouldn't put Reinicke and his intern title at the top.
It's just the most recent. It's at the top, you know, chronologically.
Today. Yes,
right.
I hear you.
No, I mean, you look at it, you want to keep going. One of the non-roster invitees they signed today was suspended in the Biogenesis scandal in 2013. They're checking all of the scandal boxes. One of the non-roster guys they signed, Quelo, something like that. He was the Mets' sixth-ranked prospect in 2013. And remember when A-Rod got suspended and everybody thought it was going to be for life for the steroids?
Yeah, and it was
part of that investigation the second Biogenesis scandal.
Gotcha.
But the only scandal they haven't had is their hats don't look like swastikas. That's the only scandal I don't know if you saw that with the Padres.
The Padres hats look like swastikas?
Google real quick. Google Padres spring.
Padres Nazis.
I don't know that it does. Like, I wouldn't have noticed it if nobody said it.
But oh, my goodness.
That, Yeah, there you go.
I see it.
That's the only scandal the Red Sox are short of. They're going to come out. They're going to come out with, I don't know, like a middle finger on their spring training hats next week because they have to get every scandal. All right. And if you want to Google that at home, it is kind of, it's kind of funny, right?
It is. You know, it's yes. It's
so they have to.
It's stupid. I always wonder when these sort of things happen, how do you not catch it before you publish?
Right. Well, so here's the thing. They're going to wear their regular season hats for spring training, but because of the deal with Nike, they have to wear them for at least one or two games. So there's going to be one or two games with the players wearing those hats. And I'm sure players' agents are telling them to make sure that, you know, their hamstring tightens up that day so they don't have to be in uniform.
What are they going to do? Jeez, this is so ridiculous. They're going to do some – instead of going to London this year, they're going to go to Poland and Germany. What is this? What is this?
It's just stupid. Again, it's proofread. All right, you want to make fun of Rob Manfred. We should get into that a little bit.
Yes.
There's new proposed MLB playoff rules. They're going to get rid of the one-game wild card, go from 5 to 7 teams. The first round, it'll be one team gets the bye of the 7, and then right, and then best 2 out of 3 yes. to advance, and the number 2 seed, so the 1 seed gets the bye, right? The number 2 seed, we get to pick their playoff opponent. A couple things breaking this down off the top, and then we'll see where we divulge from there. I like the limited playoff in baseball. They have the fewest teams of any sport percentage-wise that make the playoffs. That is good. Teams should be eliminating playoff teams, not adding them, right? You look at the joke that is the NBA playoffs in the first round, no mas. I like the one-game playoff. I wouldn't get rid of that. I don't know that the wild card game is the playoffs. I know there's a debate on that, but I like that game, whatever you want to call it. I will say, I do like the idea of teams picking their own playoff opponents. I don't love it for the MLB. They have a very traditional style format. I wouldn't screw with that. I've been saying for years, I think I've said it on this show, I've been wanting the NBA to adopt that for years. But the MLB tries it. Maybe it gets closer to a reality. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. Why not just go the NFL route? That's what I want. That's, you know, I think the NFL route's the way to go. You have, you know, two wild card games per.
They'd have to restructure the divisions.
Oh, they would.
I mean, talk about expansion. There has been talk of expansion. So if you add two teams, I absolutely think that would be the direction to go.
It makes more sense. You give two teams the bye and then go that route. And then you still have a very competitive shorter series to start. And you incrementally go up from, you know, three game series or one game, which I think is one of the best things the MLB's done in a while, to 5 game series and 7. And that's probably my biggest gripe with this whole thing. Well, there's a couple things. One, having the whole like televised thing where you're picking your opponent. I find it gimmicky personally. I think it's too far of a jump for a league like the MLB to make in that realm. I don't like picking your opponent. I think that gives immediate bulletin board material.
But isn't that cool?
It is cool, but then if I were a higher seed, then I'd be angry because that kind of evens the playing field to an extent. It doesn't even the playing field. But it is a slap in the face. And if you have a team, an underdog type of team, it would be fun to watch as a fan.
This is why it's perfect for the NBA because the NBA is all about that drama. And the other thing is you have teams.
And there's no parity. Already.
Right. You have teams that get in as like 5 seeds, but take the Pacers last year, right? When Victor Oladipo got hurt, they got in as a 5 seed, but in reality, they probably shouldn't have even been in. Don't you think, you know, I think Toronto or Milwaukee, the 1 seed last year, whoever it was, would rather play the 5 seed in air quotes Pacers without Victor Oladipo. And again, that bulletin board material is excellent. What it should be in the NBA is the top 4 seeds get to pick in order and they pick anybody. So like, for instance, if the 1 seed wants to play the 3, then the 2, 4, and 5 would all pick, et cetera. I love that concept. And honestly, I wouldn't hate seeing it in the NFL. You look sometimes how disorganized they get, and this year worked out perfectly, but how disorganized and out of order things can get when you have a 12-4 wild card team visiting an 8-8 division champion, right? It can be a mess.
But they don't need it, neither does the NBA. The MLB needs it, right? They needed some drastic change.
I don't think the MLB – I like the MLB playoffs. In terms of structure, I think the MLB playoffs are the best. There's not that many teams. It's a clear order. Winning the division matters. Those three things, Those three things are huge for me from a and there's winning in there's live or die situations. It's not all live or die like the NFL, but they exist. I love the MLB playoff format. I would not touch it unless they add two teams, in which case if they go to 32 teams, I think the NFL format would work.
Yeah, maybe that's a route they go into, and I'd be for that as well. I do think if you're going to expand the playoffs, you need to shorten the regular season, which will never happen because old-time baseball fans are too into statistics to let you mess with that, which I think is worthwhile. The games are too long, so are the seasons. So that's something that should be addressed. But one positive, I do appreciate the fact that the MLB is considering some drastic changes because it's evident that they need it.
But they're not changing the part of the game that needs to be changed.
It's the speed. The speed, yeah. And I agree. I 100% agree. And then you have Trevor Bauer coming out criticizing Manfred, who, listen, I'm not a fan of Rob Manfred. I'm also not a fan of Trevor Bauer. The guy's a loudmouth, and he's kind of a moron. He's the drones guy. He's the Cleveland Indians pitcher. He's the guy who threw a ball over the center field fence when Terry Francona went to take him out of the game. He got Terry Francona really
mad.
Oh,
that's awesome. I love that. That's awesome.
Well, no, it was awesome to watch. It was extremely idiotic for him to do that. And he admitted that was a mistake to his credit. But the guy's kind of a boob. Anyway, he was criticizing Manfred for letting that leak out. And I think it's people like that are kind of a problem for the game. We need change. And when you have guys like David Ortiz retiring and then being like, yeah, no, I get it now. I get it that I was kind of stubborn to say, to be angry that people wanted me to speed up my routine at the plate. Watching the game now being retired, I understand it because it's slow. It's too slow. And you have too many players who are not willing to budge on that. And I think that's very unfortunate. And again, to be fair, Trevor Bauer was angry at Manfred because he thought that this was an effort to try to distract from this cheating scandal, which is absolutely a legitimate point to be made. But he just annoys me, so I'm going to be mad at him. But I do think that change needs to be made, and it should start with the speed of the game. But the playoff format, I don't think shaking that up would be such a terrible thing. I do like the one game playoff, and if they can find a way to keep that, if they do want to change it, I'm all for change.
Okay, so one more because we're breaking news on a pre-recorded podcast again.
Yeah.
Chaim Bloom just said that the Red Sox will address the permanency regarding Renicky as the manager following the conclusion of the MLB's investigation. So I would guess that means that he's going to get suspended for like a month. And that's why he's the interim manager right now. He's going to get a small suspension. They will bring in an interim to the interim, and then he will be named full-time manager when he returns from the suspension. That would be my guess.
Is Cora you're talking about or Renicky?
Renicky. So they said they will address Renicky's permanence. They will address the interim title when the MLB investigation is over. That, to me, means Renicky's going to get some sort of suspension, but it's not going to be major. He'll manage the team through spring training. He'll have to sit out, I don't know, a month or two, and they'll go to an interim to the interim, right? The assistant to the regional manager. And then when Renicky comes back from the suspension, he'll be the full-time manager, would be my guess.
It's a lot to follow. Yeah,
it's a mess. It's a total mess. All right, speaking of things that aren't a mess, what if I told you, Leibowitz, that in the year of our Lord, 2020, the XFL.
Not our. No, okay, go on.
What? Oh, is that the term when you want to be like overly dramatic and sarcastic?
Yes, but we follow the Christian calendar in America, and neither of us, I don't know if you knew this, bro, neither of us are Christian.
So okay,
it's not our. And the year of some people.
Allow me some artistic license here, okay?
Okay, please go on. I'm sorry. Please,
I'm not Adam Sandler playing myself in Uncut Gems, okay?
Okay.
Yeah. In 2020 AD, right? Is that the religious one or no?
Yeah. That works.
Angelo Domini or whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
You know, my point being, we are in what is technically the future. And the yeah. XFL.
It's five years after Back to the Future 2.
Exactly. The XF freaking L has their shit together more than the Boston Red Sox. Could you believe that? Fantastic first weekend from the XFL. Fantastic first weekend. The quality of play, not great. Way better than the AAF. And they make up for it by just giving us an insane amount of access. From hearing what the coaches are saying and the players, in-game interviews, I thought the color commentators they picked were three out of four were great. Wasn't a fan of the team on that last game outside of Pat McAfee, but Greg Olson really stood out to me. He was terrific. I think that it's an interesting strategy. I think the XFL is going for two groups of people. They're going for the diehard X's and O's football people and the hardcore gamblers. And that's not necessarily the biggest group, but those are two very loyal groups. And once you lock them in, you have them. So I don't know if that's a sustainable business model or not. I like it because I'm in one of those groups. I enjoy it. We'll see if it works. But, you know, I applaud them. They're trying a lot of different things. The rules are great. I love the kickoff rule. I love the PAT rule. It was good. It was watchable. They got me back for next week. I don't think that was ever in much doubt, but they have me back for next week. It was good stuff.
I like how they do the immediate interviews of players, like after they miss field goals. Like, I'm just waiting for one day they break news that like someone's like grandmother died. Like, hey, great play out there. Your grandmother's dead. And just to see what their reaction is on live television, because I mean, that would be phenomenal TV. Let's be honest. But they are interviewing people directly after they mess up, and who knows, their job could be in jeopardy. But yeah, let's see what they have to say. It's like interviewing a fighter after he'd been knocked out. But it's fun. It's great to watch. And I think you made a couple, you know, good observations there. It's good to have the X's and O's guys, obviously, but gambling is the future of sports media. I think you see what Barstool just did, selling out to selling a lot of their stake to a casino company, gambling company. I think you're going to see leagues go in that direction. You're going to see sports books at stadiums. And now the XFL, the path for them to stick around is to embrace that change in sports, in addition to bringing in some decent talent, which they do have. It was good football. I thought it was entertaining. It was fun to watch. The production itself was great. You know, Greg Olson really did impress me in the booth. And I think the changes are unique. I do wonder if, you know, the novelty is going to wear off and people won't like it as much. But overall, it was an impressive week one. That said, like, none of these leagues have ever lasted. I don't have much confidence that this one will, but maybe that sports gambling angle will save it, and it can use that to kind of catapult it into the next few years.
We'll see. I mean, look, I think they can get a year. I think they're not going to be like the AAF where they'll shut down in the middle of the season. Whether they can get to an off season and to another one, we will see. All right. Final thoughts, Libitz. I know you have yours. I just want to ask you this one real quick before I forget. I'm too lazy to Google it. I just sort of saw this on Twitter today. What's the thing with people standing up their brooms in the kitchen?
Yeah, zero gravity. Apparently your brooms, it's not rocket science. I think I can understand it as a simpleton. The brooms have bristles on them, and the bristles disperse, and it covers a more vast
area. But people are standing them up upside down.
They're not standing it up stick first, handle first.
Yeah.
No, they're not.
I'm looking at a picture right now.
Someone's doing Photoshop. That's impossible. What is voodoo?
I got to look more into it. I was too lazy to Google it today. It seems stupid.
So no, it's bristles down, and it just covers a wide range. So it disperses the weight evenly, and it balances the broomstick out. It's a hollow stick, right? So it's not super difficult. Yeah. People are freaking out because someone discovered that you can do that. That's all that is.
All right. Yeah, let's get to your final thought here.
The Oscars. I forget what I was going to say. It was the lowest watched Oscars of all time, partially because they didn't have a host. They didn't have a comedian go out there and do a monologue, which is always the only thing worth watching at these events. We talked about Ricky Gervais, I think we did, a couple months ago or last month when he did the Golden Globes. And
maybe
he was
not funny.
He's not funny?
I don't think he's funny. I don't find British humor funny. Like, I don't. He was good. He was good at the Golden Globes. I just don't think I don't think he's funny in general.
You realize he's probably one of the most influential comedians, not of our generation, but of all time. Like one of them.
The whole British. I can't do the British humor thing. It doesn't do it for me.
Oh my God.
All right, back to the Oscars.
Well, he would have been phenomenal at the Oscars.
Would have been.
Instead, you know, and we discussed this a little off air before we recorded. You have a bunch of celebrities that don't really like being made fun of. They take themselves very seriously. It's one of the most pretentious industries, you know, in the world.
Just give me my award. I don't want any jokes made. Just give me my recognition.
We want the platform to say what we want to say. We don't want any criticism though, especially in real time, which was the great thing about having a guy like Ricky Gervais or Chris Rock host the Oscars. Although I don't think Ricky Gervais did the Oscars. Chris Rock did though. But it's just, it shows that people really don't care as much when you don't have somebody worth watching hosting.
That's the best part. The NFL awards have a monologue.
Exactly. Right? Steve Harvey. They all do.
You need to have a monologue. It's the best part.
It's phenomenal. I'll go back and watch Norm MacDonald's ESPYs monologue back from the late 90s. It's hilarious. It's so funny. And they're kind of evergreen to an extent because these celebrities stick around and you kind of still understand the references. So I love going back and watching them. So you get the clicks online, which these big media companies love. And it's unbelievable. The amount of shares and clicks that Ricky Gervais monologue got should make it so you have someone like Ricky Gervais hosting these events.
The
so what
of
people get roasted.
God is why there was no host this year too. Like it goes hand in hand, right? Because the people there don't want that.
But then you get people going up there and like Joaquin Phoenix is talking about milking cows and dairy and I don't even know. It's so annoying. I don't care. I'm gonna eat cheese. I like cheese. I'm gonna drink milk in my coffee. I like milk in my coffee. I don't need Joaquin Phoenix, who I think is a phenomenal actor. I really did enjoy in Joker, and I think he should have won that, by the way. I don't need him to do that to preach to me. Also, the fact that Uncut Gems and Adam Sandler specifically got snubbed was egregious. That was a phenomenal movie, a phenomenal performance. And that's a movie that people are going to be talking about more so than any other one that was nominated, maybe with the exception of like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or something like that. I just can't stand it. Netflix movies not being allowed in. This is like the MLB. It's old school.
I thought The Irishman was nominated.
They showed that in theaters too.
That's right.
So that it would get nominated because it's a loophole. It's stupid. It's stupidity.
Look, here's my – I'm not an award show guy at all. Golden Globes, the Emmys, the Oscars, the Grammys, whatever. Like, I consume very little current media. I'm not a big movie guy. I'll generally see things like a year or two after they come out, just whenever they show up on HBO. Don't listen to a ton of music that comes out. Now, I really don't watch any new TV shows that aren't sports related. I mostly just stick to what's on Netflix. So – I'm pretty disinterested with this stuff to begin with. I don't really keep up too much with pop culture, despite the fact that I host a sports and entertainment podcast, as it says in the bio.
I got
like five texts when Eminem got up on the stage because I am still a huge Eminem fan. Like that was as good as that show was going to get. And everybody in the crowd was so pissed because Eminem, one, represents a time when pop culture was something it is very much not anymore and represents the pop culture that the current people involved in pop culture are trying to get away from. Like, I don't know if you saw how disgusted Billie Eilish looked. Like, oh my God, actually having to listen to a legitimate beat and somebody pronouncing their vocals.
She's talented.
She couldn't stand that.
She's brutal.
She couldn't fathom it. Like, I loved Eminem because it reminded me of when, like, remember when like things could just be cool because they were cool and like it wasn't cool to hate things or you didn't dig too far into it or whatever. It was just like, hey, I enjoy listening to these songs, so I am going to listen to these songs. And that's it. That's all pop culture was. Oh, this is a cool TV show. I'm just going to watch this TV show and I'm not going to think anything more about it. And we don't need think pieces, right? And we don't need to delve deep into the meaning of things. It's like the Scrody McBoogerballs episode of South Park, right? That's one of my favorite ones because of how true that message is. That's so far gone. So to see Eminem back was just a cool pop culture moment for me. Because, like, for instance, take the Kanye West Taylor Swift moment, right? That is an all-time great moment in my childhood.
Amazing.
I dressed as Kanye West for Halloween that year. There's no way that flies now.
I dressed as Taylor Swift.
Did you actually?
No.
Okay, I would demand pictures. There was another Eminem one when Sacha Baron Cohen, before his Bruno movie, had a equipment malfunction, right, and got dropped into Eminem's lap in the crowd while he was wearing a thong. I don't know if you remember that one. I think that was at the VMAs.
Okay.
Like, this stuff just wouldn't fly anymore because
I love the one where in the interview where he's being interviewed by James Franco and he comes out.
I'm saying like these moments
at the award
like
show.
That was in a movie, right? It's like I get so much crap from my friends for still liking Eminem. I do.
Yeah.
And I listened to his last album. I liked it. Look, he's not the guy he was in the late 90s and early 2000s. He's not. That's fine. But the way things have evolved, because everything's so immediate, you can't like Eminem anymore because he had two bad albums coming out of rehab in the late 2000s. And it's just like, oh, he sucks. Like, nobody gives it a chance. Eminem just sucks now because everybody says he sucks. And now it's suddenly uncool to like Eminem, even his older stuff. And that just pisses me off. And that's what turns me off to pop culture now is that everything's so immediate. Everything's so what have you done for me lately? Sports are like that. And I love sports because they're like that. I hate that pop culture is like that because you can't appreciate the greats anymore. You can't appreciate things that were good 10, 20 years ago, right? Oh, Family Guy sucks. Why do you still watch Family Guy? Because I got a lot of joy out of it when I was a teenager and it was great. And sure, it's not what it was, but even watching the new episodes remind me of how much I enjoyed the old ones. So I'll watch them. Listening to new Eminem reminds me of how much I enjoyed classic Eminem. So even if the songs aren't quite as good, I can still enjoy them. I'll still listen. You don't need to get butthurt over it. I didn't even think I was going to go on that whole rant, but I've been thinking that I meant to go on that rant when the Eminem album came out. We never talked about it on the show, but that's an old pop culture rant.
So I'll say something about Eminem. There's a quote. It's like it's tough to get out of bed and do and get up to work at 5 a.m. when you've been sleeping in silk pajamas. And that's which essentially means once you have it all, how do you stay motivated to continue to create? I think that every single artist falls victim to that who reaches a pinnacle of success like Eminem has. I also, you know, he's kind of rubbed me the wrong way since he decided to dye his beard black. I don't get it. He's Slim Shady. He needs blonde hair, please, or shave it. No facial hair. I don't like the facial hair at all. He needs to get
rid of it. The facial hair I don't like. The change in hair color has to do with his sobriety, and if he needs that psychologically, then I'm
fine. Fine.
The beard is not a great look. I will
it's
give
a bad
you that.
Look. It's jarring. It is jarring to see Eminem.
I'm kind of
like
used to it at this point, but
yeah, he's had it for
a
while.
It's still not great. I'm used to it, but it's not great.
But yeah, he's all right. I'm not as big of a fan of him now than I was back then. And it was kind of weird seeing him on stage and seeing people not really care that he was on stage, considering.
Yeah, I read that as they were pissed that he was there, and it's like, why isn't this being given to somebody who's had more modern accomplishments? Because
I think
Eminem,
they're just unimpressed. I think that was which is bizarre. You're seeing him do Lose Yourself Live. You should be going nuts. Like that
no,
is
I was
a,
going nuts when I saw that 2 years ago. No, I think they were pissed that it wasn't, yeah. You know, some modern artist who sucks up there instead. Because they all knew that was going to be the most talked about moment of the evening instead of them. They all knew they got upstaged by a legend and they couldn't handle it. Except
maybe.
Martin Scorsese. Look, the only people who Eminem couldn't realistically outstage, Martin Scorsese, he was enjoying it. So there's that.
Yes. And Martin Scorsese, he doesn't care. There's no one who's above him. So, like, there's no inferiority complex.
I mean, there might be a couple people who could upstage Martin Scorsese.
Maybe, but it's debatable.
Bruce Springsteen might be able to. If Bruce Springsteen randomly performed and he did, like, one of his older songs like Eminem did, that might upstage Martin Scorsese.
The best way I've heard, and you're going to hate me for this, and I think I've said it on the show before, the best way I've heard Bruce Springsteen described is a glorified karaoke singer. I'm not a fan.
That's such a bad take.
He's a good performer. I don't care for his music whatsoever.
Wait, you're a huge classic rock guy. How the hell do you believe that?
Just poop and get it over with, buddy. Like, seriously, it's very...
You also hate Mellencamp and John Bon Jovi and...
Mellencamp I don't mind as much. Bon Jovi is completely overrated, yes.
Mellencamp is just knockoff Springsteen.
Mellencamp's all right. I think Springsteen's all right. I just think he's overrated. I like a few of his songs. I'm not as big into. And I would absolutely love to see him live because I know that would be an unreal experience. He's a performer.
I've been to 4 concerts in my life. 3 of them were Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, and I get the appeal and I respect it. I just don't think he's as good as people let on. I think he's just a massive hit amongst sports talk radio hosts. That's at least what I found. Most people who like him, in my opinion,
I mean, look,
are sports.
I got that fandom from my dad well before I knew I was going to go into sports talk radio.
Sure,
so.
Sure. But there are a lot of sports talk people who love the guy. And I also think you're either a Billy Joel or a Bruce Springsteen guy. You can like both, but you pick one or the other.
I'm a Billy guy. So, okay, since you gave me a bad hot music take, I'm going to give you my bad hot music take.
Please.
Billy Joel's okay to me. I think a lot of his songs are overrated. Mm-hmm. I think that his best song is We Didn't Start the Fire. Whoa. That is my favorite Billy Joel song.
No, that's Vienna a bad
thing. Is good if I'm in the right mood. I always enjoy We Didn't Start the Fire.
Vienna, you ever hear Vienna? He takes it a little bit softer. It's more, you know, it's a beautiful song. You got to listen to Vienna. You ever hear Vienna?
I don't care. We Didn't Start the Fire is one of my favorite all-time songs, period.
Well, that's a great song to spoof too. And you're a radio guy. It is true. So I think you hear that and you're like, this is a great radio song. This is a good spoofer. Like, and I know that's not your, I don't think.
No, I just enjoy it. Although I did spoof it once. I wrote a couple verses when Brady set the record for most individual players throwing a touchdown too.
Exactly. It's perfect for that sort of thing. I've heard so many covers of it.
I like it better than Piano Man. I also
think Piano Man is like, I put Piano Man in the same category as like American Pie. It's a sing-along song. It is the quintessential sing-along song.
I can't listen to American Pie anymore because it's going to be like, it's a great song. I love American Pie. There's also a John Mayer cover that's pretty good, but the original version is
better.
Yeah,
he did it on Letterman.
But I can't listen to it because it's going to be stuck in my head for days. Every time I do, for days. Like, I hear that song coming on, I change the radio or skip to the next song as quick as I possibly can. Because it's a good song. It's not worth the sacrifice of having it in my head. Like, it's going to be stuck in my head just from this conversation. So.
It's a great song. I mean, that's an indication it's a good song, you know?
So, it is.
No. Yeah. But long story short, Billy Joel.
Day the Music Died was last week.
Was it really?
With every paper I deliver, February made me shiver.
Oh. Sad. Buddy Holly, yes. RRP.
All right. We're pushing an hour here. This is a throwback. A lot of tangents on this show.
So, the way it should be.
This is why we got to try to do multiple shows a week. This is why.
This is the problem. We bottle it up, and then we got to get it out of our system, and then, you know, 60 minutes later, here we are.
So for people who don't know, literally, Lebowitz and I have our mouths sewn shut the rest of the week. This show is the only time during the week we're allowed to talk to anybody about anything.
Exactly.
All right. Let's wrap this up here. We'll have another show again soon. Probably won't be an hour, but seriously, thank you to everybody who listened to this whole thing. I hope it was enjoyable. I mean, I think we had a pretty good one here.
Yeah.
So we'll be back with more next time. I know we haven't talked about the Celtics in a long time, and they are awesome right now. It's just tough when they have a game every other day because it's going to be dated so quick. So we'll catch up with them again at the All-Star break, which is around the corner, Bruins as well. And then we'll get into the NFL draft. But until the next show, follow us on Twitter @ConThePodcast for updates. Check us out online at clnsmedia.com. For Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon.